Chapter 2. The Moles.
Home is special. Seeing these familiar streets, my friends' houses, and the businesses I grew up with, friendly people visiting their neighbors, all bring peace to my soul. The drive into my driveway made me reflect on how small my house became. When I was young, the house and yard were huge. It now looks tiny. It has not changed. It must be me. Father was not home when I arrived, but Mom, my anchor, is here to greet me with her loving smile that instantly comforted me. My home, a small but familiar world, away from all the intrigues encountered.
Richard, my dear, give me a hug. Why were you driving so long home? Mother asked.
I needed to visit people in Alexandria. I have an office there now.
You best call Thomas. He has been worrying me to death about when you are coming.
After breakfast, Mom, I will walk over to see him. I am hungry.
Sit down, son. I will fix something. Have some tea.
Mom, I'm going to shower and change, and be down in a few. Renewed is how I felt after taking a warm shower in my bathroom surrounded by old clothes and fond memories, then putting on a pair of jeans I had not worn in 2 years. They still fit, along with an old cotton t-shirt and well-worn sneakers. Now I am home at last. Mom made my favorite pancakes, smothered with fresh blackberries. After 2 stacks, I am ready to walk to the Nelsons. Thomas must have called Mom as he is sitting on the front porch waiting for me.
Richard, I waited 2 days for you. Help me. I gave him a hand, and to my amazement, Thomas stood on his legs without crutches, a cane, or a wheelchair, with tears running down his cheeks. Richard, see what God has done for me. It is as you and I prayed for, Thomas said.
I put my arms around Thomas and held him in silence, soaking in the joy he felt. When were you first able to stand?
Just last week, here, look at the braces they made for me as he lifted the pants leg. The doctors think within another month or so of rehab, I should walk without the braces, certainly in time for school at Duke in September.
Thanks be to God. Come on, it is time to get you occupied. Thomas, is Marion or Matt home?
No. Mom is at Jones Hardware working. Dad is on some project. He will be home Saturday.
Do you have any iced tea in the kitchen? We have work to do. Thomas, you will soon be ready to take on more than the investigating you are now doing. You know of Pathway and Tech Investments. This new company made some exciting investments in tech companies in the computer sciences field. Now I want you on board as vice president. Here is your assignment. Tech Investments is looking for the brightest new faces in the industry, those with new ideas, visions for the future. Let your mind explore what tomorrow will be when computers can compile and store data. Then search that data from sources worldwide. Enable people to make computations, generate reports, create new hardware, write new programs to run business, banking, government, universities, and the military. We are already using them to compute the trajectory for space flights. The opportunity is limitless. We will be at the forefront of this science. We need to find and recruit gifted people. Find us the person who can make Dick Tracy's two-way wristwatch a reality, and the sky's the limit.
Richard, I always wanted one of those. Can they make it?
There are men out there who can do anything they can dream. Let's help them fulfill those dreams. I envision you contacting universities with departments of computer science, seeking talented students in need of scholarships. Have them write applications outlining their projects. Those most promising, we will provide scholarships under Pathway Foundation. Those gifted and ready to start up their own company, we will invest taking a share in their stock. Later, when they mature, we can have them taken to the public market. This is when we all hit the jackpot. Your starting salary is $500 per month effective July 1st. Questions?
Yes, Richard, why me?
You are gifted and trusted to carry out this vital part of our business. You will become a partner in Tech Investments as the company grows. Are you on board?
Heck yes, Richard, I love the title vice president. Sure, help me with the girls, right?
Hey man, girls will run after you. Be more selective with them than you are with the candidates for scholarships. Might help talk to these guys if you know their vocabulary and take some computer science courses at Duke. While you are visiting these universities, snoop around to see if there are anti-war groups on campus. If so, make contact. Let them understand you can provide funding and communicate with others like minds. Unity is what will make changes happen. If we can build groups in 30 or more universities, those in Congress will react. With your father's war record and your position on American War for Profit, you will fit in. We need this separate, not a part of Tech Investments. We will need to set up some nonprofit organization Pathways can fund.
You know my feeling on that. I want to be part of anything that keeps this country out of the war. Is the war in Asia going to happen?
Thomas, I guarantee it. Kennedy is under extreme pressure from the Joint Chiefs and the CIA to engage American troops who demand this war now. The bankers who profit from war and those who make the machines of war demand it. They spread money. They own Congress and the State Department. They tried to force Kennedy to go to war with Cuba, which failed. They want war for profits. Talk to Matt. I am certain he can help you with veterans groups. Let's coordinate all we can. Now, partner, I will be in bed for a couple of hours. Call you when I rest up.
Sarge, Captain wants to speak to you. Hello, Porter here.
Sergeant, sorry to bother you at the gate, but will you stop by my office before you go home today? The captain asked.
Certainly, Captain. Something up?
No big deal, Sergeant. We need to go over some things.
I will be there by 4:15, Captain. That is the first time in the last 4 years the captain has asked to see me. Maybe my request to become a detective has been approved. Most of the other uniformed officers say I have the department's cushiest assignment, but most jobs become boring and routine. I became a police officer because I thought it would be interesting and useful. The most exciting part of my day is driving home through the traffic. Going into the gate at the station caused me a little apprehension. I noticed the slight look of concern on the officer's face at the entrance as he waved me in. As I walked down the hallway toward the captain's office, I could not help observing those at their desks kept their heads down as I walked by. The captain's office is glass enclosed, commanding a view of the detective's desks. As I walked up, the door opened, and I heard, "Sergeant Porter, come in, please." The captain is seated at his desk, and two other men are inside, one sitting next to the captain, the other standing by the door. When I came inside, the man standing went around the room, closing the blinds covering the windows and door.
"Thanks for coming, Porter. This is Agent Clay and Agent Timmons of the Secret Service."
Agent Clay is sitting with a clipboard on his lap from which he took out a photograph and handed it to me. "Sergeant Porter, this was taken this past Monday at 8:32 a.m. It shows you greeting the car of Attorney General Robert Kennedy." He put down the window, "and it appears you are handing him an envelope. Is that correct?"
"Yes, sir. So what?"
"What was in that envelope?"
"Captain, that is personal. Do I have to answer this man?"
"Sergeant, I told these men you are one of the most trusted members of this force and beyond reproach, but these men have the sworn duty to check out everything going into the White House, or to anyone that works there. Please, answer his question."
"Captain, this is embarrassing. My family asked for an autographed photo of President Kennedy and Attorney General Robert Kennedy. They wish to display this photo in our house because Kennedy supports the civil rights movement. Is that a concern for the Secret Service?"
"No, Sergeant. It should not be, Clay. What you got to say?"
"Sergeant, there are protocols that must be kept, especially by sworn officers who should know better. We can't let people stick things through the window of a high official's car. You want a photo? Call at the White House and request it. This happens all the time."
"Sergeant, wait outside for a moment. Let me talk to these agents. Agent Clay, what the hell is this? You two did not come here to complain about my gate officer who has for several years now provided security and protection to those who work in the White House."
"Captain, we are in a time of crisis. Many things of national security are in the works. The director does not want anyone who is not cleared to see, speak to, or have access to the president or his cabinet members or communicate with them. This Sergeant Porter is no longer allowed on White House grounds, effective as of today. Sergeant Porter, go in," the Secret Service agents said as they pushed past me. Both had a scowl on their face as they stomped down the hallway.
"Take a seat, Sergeant. I don't understand what in the hell is going on over there, but something stinks. I was ordered to take you off gate duty at the White House. You are persona non grata there. Did you piss someone off? Did you say something out of line? Porter, I have known and respected you for years. You wanted to get your detective badge? Well, you got it. I am so pissed by those pricks telling me what I should assign. This is my department. Porter, give me your badge. Take this one. How does Sergeant Detective sound? There is a pay raise with this grade. Take your family out to celebrate. Report at 8 a.m. We will get your new assignment and workstation."
"Thank you, Captain. I appreciate all you do for the department and me." Leaving the station, I could not help thinking about Chinese food and the sweet and sour dishes they serve. The sour is being removed from the honor of the White House gate duty, the sweet getting the promotion to detective I desired for years. I will take the family out to a Chinese restaurant tonight. More to this sudden change than seems. Richard must be close to some nerve if they are watching me that close. What about him? I cannot have Violet involved in whatever is up. How do I let him know?
Richard, come down for breakfast with your father. He is leaving for Atlanta soon. Mom called out.
Be right down, Mom. Almost dressed. Gosh, it's Thursday already. I need to call the Colonel and Maggie. Good morning, Dad, Mom. A great day to be home.
Sit with me, son. What are your plans for the summer?
Not much, Dad. Got a few extra credit summer assignments I want to complete to graduate early next year.
I don't blame you for wanting out, son. School gets to be a bore after so many years. Plus, your plate is full of other projects.
Yes, Dad, that is the way I feel. School can point me in a direction, but then it is up to me. I found what I want to do. Time to get on with it.
Well, son, don't be in a rush. Enjoy your freedom. In a few years, you will have family responsibilities and commitments that take away from the personal freedom you now enjoy.
Dad, can I ask you a question both as my father and pastor?
Son, shoot.
Dad, I listened carefully to the sermon you gave in Boston. I also read the text, which I will keep forever as a guide. Now my question has to do with the text of my duty and responsibility as a Christian man. I saw and heard the thoughts of men in power. The drums of war are beating in Washington. These men desire to create a war not to make America more secure, but for their interests. Thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, will die for no purpose except to fill a few coffers. How am I, as a Christian, who knows what is coming and believes this is wrong for America and the world for that matter, supposed to conduct myself? Should I speak out in the churches, in the schools, lead demonstrations? How do I help stop this madness before so many die? My wife's family, those who support me in school, many of those who attended our betrothal, are some of those who will make the most profit from this war.
Son, the questions you asked are best answered by God. You are in a most difficult position. You must weigh what you can accomplish by being public with your position and what you can accomplish behind the scene. I am sure the same thoughts tear President Kennedy as you. I, as a church leader, have the same concerns. There are things I wish the church to do. Many in the church oppose. How does the leader of any democratic society function? You told me Kennedy does not want to put American boys' lives at risk in an unjust war. Yet many powerful people around him demand it. Many of these powerful people control the media. They can influence the opinion of Americans. They can make them believe war is needed to prevent the spread of communist dictators to our shores. They can make them believe we must sacrifice for the greater good of humanity. These people have the means to make it look like someone is un-American if they speak out. They will wrap themselves in the flag and call anyone who stands in their way a communist, a dirty red, a traitor, here in North Carolina. With the most military bases in the U.S. and home to the largest military base, Fort Bragg, with the country's largest military population, you would be run out of town if you speak out against the military. The economy of our state depends on military spending. That, son, is the problem. Money to most is more important than God or good. The Lord told us you could not serve two masters, so many of those in power chose only one master, money. Your heart, your soul is serving the right master, our Lord and Savior. Jesus Christ, let His Holy Spirit be your guide.
Dad, I understand, but if no one speaks out, money will control all events. We lose. There is no way to control the political scene without the money and support of those in power that operate in the background. No one may become a national figure, and those that do are subservient, regardless of their populist speech. Money is the key. I must find a way to use the key in a way that benefits all, not only the exempt. Have a good trip. Dad, I need to go meet Thomas. The fresh summer breeze feels good on my face walking down the street to the Nelsons. In the driveway, Matt is washing his car and playing with the dog, spraying it with the hose as it runs around the vehicle. Hey, Matt, how's things?
Great, Richard. Nice to see you. Staying out of trouble? Matt asked.
Not sure about that, Matt. Trying. Hey, I need to call the colonel. He said not to use my phone and not sure of yours.
When you are ready, I can beep him. Let him call down at the store. He knows the number.
Thanks, Matt. I am going to see Thomas first.
You don't have to go far, Richard. I am right here.
I looked around. Thomas was sitting in the front seat of the car. He started laughing, looking like you saw a ghost man. Dad will let me drive around the block. I can't wait to try it. Wanna come? Sure, man. Matt finished wiping the car and got in the front next to Thomas. Let's go. Good thing the car is automatic. Thomas does not need to push his legs as much. Drive over to the market. He is on his beeper, dialing the colonel. It is only 2 blocks to the store, so we parked in front of the phone booth and waited. The phone rang after only 2 minutes. I answered, "Hi, Colonel."
"Richard, you spoke to your friend, Sergeant Porter?"
"Not since Monday, sir. Why?"
"Well, don't call him and don't meet the girl. Porter has been reassigned. He is no longer at the White House gate. This is certainly in response to you having him deliver the note to the Kennedys. If they are watching him that close, it means that they know of your relationship. Be careful about what you do and say. If someone tries to make friends in the next few days, they are with them. Be careful."
"What else did you find out about Colonel?"
"Nothing, Richard. There is a blackout on everything about Mary. Keep your distance. I will continue to seek info and advice later. Say hi to Matt."
"Matt, I need to call Maggie. Can I use your phone?"
"Sure, Richard. Use the phone in Thomas's room."
"Hi, Maggie. Love and miss you."
"Richard, I tried to get you for 2 days. When are you going to get a service?"
"Sorry, love. I keep forgetting. I will go tomorrow for sure." Michael Whitney Strait invited us to spend the 4th of July at the Carlisle at Kennedy's apartment. "The fireworks show's view is spectacular," Michael said. "It sounds fun, so I said yes. Is that okay?"
"Certainly, dear. The 4th is on a Wednesday. Do you want to meet in the city?"
"Let's meet Monday at the plaza. We can see a show, attend the party, and spend some quiet time alone."
"Sounds like an anniversary date. I will be there by 2. Love you."
"Matt, does your beeper let you see who is calling?"
"Sure, Richard. This thing is a blessing. I will order one for you so you can be in the loop. What number do you want it to use?"
"For now, my New Haven number, Maggie, is bugging me and says I never answer."
"You are never there. How could you answer?"
"Thomas, we are going to a 4th of July party in the city. Why don't you come with me? We will get you a room at the plaza." Michael Strait is holding the party at President Kennedy's apartment at the Carlisle. Michael is a Whitney. Many lovely ladies will attend. I am sure some can help exercise your legs.
"Can I?"
"Let's do it. It is time my partner meets my bride." Thomas and I got a flight to New York out of Raleigh on Monday morning and took a taxi to the Plaza Hotel. It is fun sitting next to Thomas, watching his eyes and facial expressions. He has never been to the city and is mesmerized by the sights, more so when we pulled up in front of the imposing Plaza Hotel and a uniformed door captain opened the taxi door, claiming, "How lovely to see you. Welcome to the plaza, sirs." I helped Thomas out. He still has not said a word. The assistant manager came saying, "Nice to see you again, Mr. Martinson. This is Mr. Nelson, I presume?" Thomas's eyes are as large as saucers at this time, but he could not speak, just nodded. "I was not able to get you adjoining rooms. Mr. Nelson is on the same floor, 2 doors from yours. We gave you the same suite on your last visit with us. Let me know if I can help in any way while you are here." He motioned for a bellman to show us to our rooms. Thomas is still in shock, his eyes bulging, taking in all the sights silently. We took Thomas first to his place. The bellman asked him if everything was satisfactory.
"Heck yes."
"Come with me, Thomas. We will go to my room, then get a snack." After the bellman left with a tidy tip, Thomas let out a yell.
"Richard, I never expected anything like this. This place. The city is overwhelming. You are a world traveler now. Even the manager calls you by name. How do you do it?"
"Thomas, I don't do anything by myself. I am like you, a guy from North Carolina who made good choices that led me here. You are on the same path. We work together to help others, and good things happen. Perhaps that is God's plan for us. Come on, let's go down for a snack before Maggie arrives. It will give you a chance to look around, see the sights." We stopped by the front desk. I asked to tell Maggie Drexel. We will be the oak waiting. Monday, at lunchtime in the city, is hectic. The lobby is jammed with tourists arriving for the 4th of July spectacular, others wanting to dine, drink, and enjoy the endless parade on 5th Ave and Central Park. The wealthy crowd is here wanting to see and be seen. It made for a great show. Thomas is relishing the parade with all his senses, as am I. I did not think we could get a table in the Oak. There was a line of people waiting, shoving their way to get a spot. The maitre d' came to me and said, "Follow me, sir. Your table is ready." He led us to a window table overlooking Central Park and gave us a broad smile. I tried to give him a tip, but he smiled and walked away. People demanding why these young boys were given a prize table? Thomas has no clue as to the drama being played out or why. He is having fun. We ordered a pot of tea, a fruit plate with rolls, sat back, and watched the play.
Richard, this scene reminds me of The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy said, "Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. We are sure not in Wake Forest."
Thomas, your mom said the same thing in Baltimore. You should have seen me when I made my first trip here. Almost broke my neck looking around. Wait until you go to Broadway, Times Square. Tonight maybe Maggie will want to take a tour. Suddenly the room grew quiet. A sudden drastic change from the endless din of conversation and clinking glasses laden with ice. I turned to look at what was happening. The people at the tables were peering toward the lobby entrance when I saw what captured the attention of even the jaded New York crowd. Entering the Oak is a young lady who could make a train stand still to observe her. She is wearing a broad-brimmed white hat with a veil covering her eyes. A long, silky, pale, almost creamy jade coat came to her ankles, covering her white silk dress. Wearing a choker of pearls that must be worth a small fortune, she wore white silk-covered high heels. Her hand displayed a large diamond that flashed for all. She was stunning, in control of the entire room. Thomas is sitting with his mouth hung open, eyes fixed on this vision who seems to approach our table. She is walking ever so slowly, enjoying every moment of the control she has over the crowd when she comes close, saying, "Richard, have you been waiting long?" I stood and kissed the cheek of this beauty, this dream, this angel, saying to her, "All my life, my love." Thomas Nelson, may I present Maggie Drexel, soon to be Mrs. Martinson, my love. People are clapping, smiling, waving to Maggie as she sits between us. The smile on her face is worth whatever money this trip costs, a memory to be filed away forever. Thomas has not said a word. He is awestruck until Maggie holds out her hand for him to kiss.
Thomas, a pleasure to meet you. Richard speaks endlessly of you. He has a great love for you. I know of the accident and what you went through. Now to see you sitting here, next to me, is wonderful. We will be great friends. Have lunch yet?
No, waiting for you. We ordered fruit.
Well, let's order.
Thomas is so nervous he knocks over his water glass, his face flushed red as the flags hang outside. A busboy scurried to wipe up the spill and bring fresh napkins while our waiter stood by to describe the chef's specials. Maggie, elected for the poached salmon salad. I asked if the chef will make me a grilled roast beef with cheddar cheese sandwich with French fried potatoes. Thomas said that sounds good. Can I have the same? Indeed. Any wine with lunch? No, more tea. Bring another cup for the lady, please. Maggie, can we be tourists today? This is Thomas's first day in the city. Let's show him the sights. I will get a car and driver to take us all over. We can take the ferry, to the Statue of Liberty, go to the top of the Empire State Building, tour Broadway, eat pizza, and have fun.
Richard, I would love that. We can change and go casual. Oh, Thomas, you will love it. Too bad I don't have a friend in town to keep you company. Richard, come, let's change. I am excited to do this. I never get to be a tourist. Mother always insists I must stand above, whatever that is supposed to mean.
I stopped at the concierge to secure a car and driver. How many hours, Mr. Martinson, will you need him? Let's say 5 hours. We can be ready in 30 minutes. Gregory will be waiting in front, sir. Maggie is tugging at my sleeve, hurrying my love. I want to see our wedding room again as we rush to the elevator with Thomas saying, "Hey guys, wait for me. I can't run yet, you know." Thomas, change and come to our room in 30 minutes. 30 minutes. What are you in a hurry for, darling? She ran to our bedroom, undressed in a flash, threw back the comforter and covered up, saying, "Come here, dear." Who am I to argue with such a lovely lady as I jumped in beside my wife? Hurry up, darling. We don't have much time, as she rolled on top of me and took my lips in hers. It seemed like only a minute when we heard the knock, knock on the door. I grabbed a robe and opened the door for Thomas, who can see I am preoccupied. Do you want me to come back? No, Thomas. We are changing. Turn on the TV. Watch the news. We will be right out. I was heading for the bathroom when Maggie grabbed me, saying, Not so fast, dear. We still have things to discuss. Get back here. We are in a festive mood going down to our driver, Gregory, parked in front in a new 62 black Cadillac Town sedan. When he saw us exit, he opened the rear door for Maggie and me, while Thomas got in front, then as Superman says, oopie up and away. Gregory, we are tourists today, first stop at the Empire State Building's top.
Whatever you say, Mr. Martinson, I am here for you.
Gregory, please call me Richard. This is my best friend Thomas, and Maggie's the love of my life. We are here to have fun. Your suggestions are appreciated. We drove down the most expensive street in the world, Fifth Avenue.
Gregory gave us some history as we cruised down Fifth. Caroline Astor built a house on the southwest corner of 34th Street, which began Fifth Avenue's rule as the most fashionable residential neighborhood. In 1893, they made the Astoria Hotel, which later joined its neighbor as the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. That site is now the home of the Empire State Building, so you see the history here. Edith Wharton's 1920 Pulitzer Prize novel, The Age of Innocence, has its central theme Fifth Avenue and the lives of New York's social elite who lived here. They widened Fifth Avenue in 1908 to accommodate the increased traffic. This area was residential, now commercial. The first commercial building on Fifth Avenue was built by Benjamin Altman, who bought the corner lot on the northeast corner of 34th Street in 1896. In 1906, his department store, B. Altman & Company, occupied the whole block front. The fashionable women came, and as did other high-end stores. Lord & Taylor flagship store is here near the Empire State Building and the New York Public Library.
Gregory pulled up in front of the Empire State and helped first Maggie, then Thomas, who was a little stiff. So Maggie and I put Thomas between us as we went into the building. Gregory said he would be in front in an hour and a half.
Thomas looked up as high as he could see and said, Richard, where is the top of this?
Way up there, way up there.
Have you ever been up there, Richard?
Heck no. I'm afraid of heights.
So am I. Are you trying to get me sick?
Thomas, we must overcome our fears so we may fight the dragons.
Richard, I have no intention of fighting dragons.
Maggie is laughing at both of us. Come on, children. I will protect you, as she got our tickets. To the top, up, up, and away we go to the 102nd floor, the top of the world. Boys, it takes about 40 minutes to get to the top. Come all hold hands.
Richard, my heart is pounding too fast, I might pass out.
Thomas, don't pee your pants, and you will be fine.
It gets more comfortable with each floor. By the time we get to the top, you will be like Superman, ready to leap tall buildings. You leap off one, he said with a laugh. Thomas and I spent the rest of the ride up with our eyes closed. Maggie is ecstatic. She is now the brave one, with two big, strong men, squeezing her hands like little boys. Finally, the top. Our scary trip is worth the pain, as the doors open to a breathtaking view.
Maggie, thank you, Thomas, told her. This is incredible. I would never believe this, nor will ever forget. Here, I understand why super rich men desire their offices to be high. They can look down at us, the minions they think we are and feel like gods. They might even think they are gods for all I know. They behave that way, dictating to all, standing here looking over the world it seems probable. Richard, remember the scripture when Satan tempted Christ by taking him to a high place where he could see the world, offering Christ dominion over it all if he would serve him. I think Satan has taken some men here and made them the same offer.
Maggie went up to Thomas and kissed his cheek, saying, Now I know why Richard loves you so much. You both are wise beyond your years. Come on, the trip down is easy. Gregory is waiting in front, as promised. We walked up, he is smiling.
You all need a restroom after that trip. Where to now?
Let's take the ferry ride to Liberty Park. Will you go with us so you can take some photos?
Sure, you get the tickets while I park. I have a camera. Do you want motion or stills?
Stills are best, easier to show around. I can tell Thomas is getting tired. This has been his first day being on his feet for this long. Fortunately, the boat has excellent seats. We are lucky to have Gregory. He brought a superb 35mm Canon camera, took dozens of memorable photos we will treasure forever.
Richard, I don't think I am ready to take the trip up the statue. Let me sit here and enjoy the view.
We will not leave you alone. Let's look around, buy some stuff for the family, and then return to our journey. The sun is setting, giving a strange orange and red glow to the skyline of the city. We got some stunning photos of the three of us with the city aglow in the background. Those alone are worth the boat ride. Gregory, we need some great New York pizza. Where is the best place for it?
Daifara, none better in the world. It is over in Brooklyn. Want to try it?
Sure sounds fun. Can we see the bridge? Driving over the Brooklyn Bridge, Thomas asked if he could use the camera. Thomas took shots of the bridge. Maggie and I kissed in the back seat. Gregory, driving over to J Street, there is the unimposing facade of Daifara's Pizza. The looks might not be glamorous, but roll down the window and breathe in life. Gregory, park. Join us for pizza. We'll get us a table.
Tell DeMarco it is for Gregory. We go back a long way. He will be in the kitchen. But his staff will say to him, this man will not let anyone make a pizza except himself. He lives for those pies.
We entered this lovely pizza house as a family. I told them that Gregory is with us parking the car. The waiter ran to the kitchen, bringing with him DeMarco. Where is Gregory? He asked. Then Gregory came inside, paisano, and they hugged.
Get my friends a table by the kitchen. I wish to talk as I work, DeMarco told the staff.
Without asking, the waiter brought a large carafe of red wine, some antipasto, saying salute, as he poured each of us a large glass of wine, which we did not refuse. Everyone is hungry. The fragrance, this melding of garlic, fresh basil, rosemary, hand-grated Parmigiana cheese, and the fresh smell of baking bread is enough to drive the senses wild. All toasted Gregory for this day, his bringing to this beautiful place, and the friendship he gave to us. We consumed a second carafe of wine while Gregory told us the story of DeMarco and Daifara Pizza House.
Each pizza is handmade by DeMarco. He closes the restaurant if he cannot work. He believes he should make the pizza. Three of his seven children work in the kitchen. He makes about 150 pies a day and cuts fresh basil over each. DeMarco will only use imported ingredients, flour, extra virgin olive oil, only San Marzano tomatoes, buffalo mozzarella cheese from Casapulla, freshly grated grana, Padano cows, milk cheese, three types of mozzarella cheese, and hand-grated Parmigiana Reggiano cheese, all from Italy. The fresh basil and oregano come from Israel. He bakes these handmade pies in the oven at about 800°F, which creates the thin, crispy crust. Once you have one, you must have more. They are addicting.
The waiter brought our pie while DeMarco came out to watch as we took our first bite. Maggie took one bite, then got up and kissed DeMarco. The blush made his face as red as his soul, but he was delighted and shared a glass of wine with us before rushing back to his kitchen. We consumed our third carafe of wine and third pie before thanking this wonderful man, saying buongiorno to our new friend.
Where to now, Richard?
Let's head back to the plaza. Drive through Broadway and Times Square, Thomas. Needs to get the full treatment.
Richard, I am so full and dizzy from the wine. All I need is a bed.
I am not sure if the sights he will see are worth seeing. That is the worst neighborhood in Manhattan. Even the taxis are careful there. Thomas, where are you from?
Wake Forest, North Carolina.
Where else have you lived?
Only in Wake Forest, Gregory, all my life.
Then this is a must. You will see a part of life in America only seen here. Not the life you want to live, but the life of many lost souls. This area is infamous for sex shops, go-go clubs, prostitution, and drugs. Not the place for young Christian men from North Carolina, that is for sure. Look around, take a view of hell. That is this area now, used to be the center of the arts. All the great artists from years ago played here, but the decay has set in.
Gregory, I saw enough. Let's go to the plaza where it is clean.
I paid Gregory $200 for his time and thanked him for being so gracious. Richard, I appreciate you. Call me when you are ready to go to the airport. I will pick you up. The ride is on me. We spent the next day, Tuesday, playing around. We took a rowboat ride in Central Park. We even took a ride on a horse-drawn carriage. All in all, we had fun. Wednesday, the 4th of July, is to be a festive occasion. The city streets are ablaze with American flags on every light pole. Flags and bunting on all the shops. Even the taxis carried flags. Tourists walking around with American flag t-shirts. There is a crowd of students in Central Park with Uncle Sam top hats. It seems as if everyone is in town to celebrate the birth of our nation. After a lovely breakfast in our suite, we went to get ready for the Carlisle party. Michael asked us to be there by 3 p.m., but Maggie said we would arrive no earlier than 5 p.m. I will never be the first guest at a party, Maggie insisted. It is a short taxi ride up Madison Avenue to the Carlisle. We arrived at 5:07 p.m., as Maggie requested. Kennedy's apartment occupies two stories from the 34th to the 35th floors. The party is in full swing on our arrival.
Michael comes rushing to the door to greet us, saying, "Where have you been? Everyone is asking to see the couple of the year." My God, that was a grand affair. Everyone in Christendom is talking about those horses, carrying the food. Spectacular. Come on, let me introduce you around. Who is your friend here? Do I know him?
No, Michael Thomas Nelson, Michael Strait. Thomas is my best friend and business partner.
Wonderful to meet you, Thomas. You have good friends. There are more Brits at this party than Americans, he said. The English love fireworks displays and any reason to party.
Michael led us upstairs to the solarium and a deck overlooking the city and Central Park. Most of the guests are surrounding a marble-top bar set up in the corner of the deck. Michael motioned to a young man who was talking to a group at the bar to come over.
Max Stevens, meet my dear friend, Richard Martinson, the Yale lawyer, investor, and philanthropist I told you about. Richard, Max here is an interesting guy, a student like you and an activist. You both seem to have similar interests. You guys chat. I must look after my guest.
Max, this is my fiancé, Maggie Drexel, and my dear friend, Thomas Nelson.
Richard, can you stay and talk for a bit? I know a couple of girls here that I want to introduce to Thomas.
I am left standing with Max Stevens, who seems a rather intense fellow, not much in smiles. Makes me uncomfortable.
Richard, care to join me in some lemonade? It has a kick to it. Michael says it is an old family recipe. I think it's good English gin with lemon juice.
Max, Michael said you were an activist. Just what is that?
Nothing that will make me any money, that is for sure. A group of us, led by Alan Haber and Tom Hayden, formed a group we call SDS, or Students for a Democratic Society. We are holding a meeting in a few days with ELID, or League for Industrial Democracy, to merge these groups so we can be a more effective voice.
So, what is the purpose of these groups?
To counter this anti-Soviet propaganda and keep us out of the war. The United States is determined to go to war with Russia, and we do not want to die for their games. Michael told me that you are opposed to war and helped fight for people of color's civil rights. Some of the colored civil rights organizations are joining us. What is your position on the war now brewing?
Max, I am a lawyer, not a general. I believe there are wars of necessity and wars of opportunity. I am for wars of necessity and opposed to wars of opportunity.
What do you mean by necessity?
Max, the way I like to define things is to take them to the smallest possible root. Here I use a family as an illustration. A man with three children, a wife, a farm, lives in peace and is self-sufficient. Someone desires the man's property and conceives a plan to take it by force. They take up arms and surround the farm, demanding the family leave and give the attackers the property. The family, including the three children, take up arms and defend their home. To me, this is a war of necessity for the farmer and his family. It is a war of opportunity for those that attempt to take it by force. That, Max, is my thoughts on wars.
Interesting viewpoint, Richard. I would like to discuss this with you in more detail. Can we meet for lunch sometime?
Max, here's my card. Give me a call. Today is for fun, not politics. I need to find my girl before someone steals her away. Thankfully, Maggie came upstairs with Thomas and a rather attractive young, around 20-year-old girl on his arm. They seem to have hit it off. Richard, come and meet my friend Liz, Liz Altman. We know each other from Dartmouth. Liz came to me and wrapped her arms around me and kissed me on the cheek. We are dying to see who caught Maggie. You are better looking than she said. Life creates some exciting scenes. How or why is the mystery? 6 months ago, Thomas was confined to a wheelchair that had held him captive for years. The mysterious hand of God led him from the confines of his family home in North Carolina, with seemingly no opportunity in his future. Today, he sits atop the most luxurious and by far the most expensive apartment in the great city of New York. He is surrounded by the wealthy elite, a lovely young lady, and his future unbounded. Seeing his smiling, happy face makes my heart warm. It almost brings tears of joy to my face. Then I turn and see the face of an angel smiling down upon me, Maggie, who only God could have brought. How do I deserve all this good fortune? I know not what, but now I want to be alone with Maggie and hold her tight to my chest before I awaken from a dream. Thomas, let's get cold drinks for the girls. We went to the bar and ordered 4 lemonades. They float slices of lemon in the drink topped with a cherry. Thomas, what about Liz? Is she nice?
Richard, she is really nice. She wants to go back to the plaza with us for dinner. Is that okay?
Perfect. Let's get out of here as soon as the fireworks are over. Tell Maggie you are tired, and we can split. The fireworks show is, as Michael claimed, extravagantly beautiful. The grand finale is spectacular. They created the American flag in the sky with bombs bursting around it so loudly they shook the building. The entire city cheered the ending. You can hear their screams from our perch high above the city. Thomas is thrilled to be a part of this event, something he never dreamed possible. I found Michael and Maggie by my side, thanked him profusely for including us in this affair.
Michael said, "Richard, we have many things to discuss. Perhaps we can get together before returning to Chicago."
"Please call me," I said, giving him my card. The short ride back to the plaza is a scene no one wanted to sit in the front of the taxi by themselves, so we all squeezed into the back seat. The girls crushed together with Thomas on one side and I the other were laughing all the way. I stopped at the desk and asked for 2 bottles of champagne with 4 glasses sent up. "Right away, Mr. Martinson. Anything else? Send some crab cakes." "Certainly, sir. How many? Enough for 4 will be nice."
Upon entering, Liz said, "How lovely, Maggie. No boyfriend of mine ever treated me like this."
"Richard is special, as I told you. So is Thomas." "Let's freshen up," Maggie said, leaving with Liz for the bathroom.
Room service was there almost as soon as we were. They brought 2 bottles of Moët. "Is this satisfactory?" the waiter asked. "Looks good to me, thanks."
Liz came out fresh and fresher, sitting next to Thomas on the settee. "How do I look?"
Thomas blushed, looking at her slightly unbuttoned blouse, saying, "Great. Really great."
"Pour me champagne, and let's toast."
Thomas stood and poured each of us a glass. You could tell he is nervous as the bubbles spill over the glass. I am sure he is sweating. He raised his glass, saying, "Today, tomorrow, and forever with you."
We touched glasses and swore our friendship forever. Thomas is more at ease as Liz pulls him down next to her. She pulled him close, then kissed his lips, not with passion, but earnestly. I watched, thinking Thomas might pass out, but he held her close for the moment.
Maggie laughed, saying, "Go, girl, get that man."
We were laughing, enjoying what has been a wonderful day, and promises to be an even sweeter night for all.
"Liz, where are you staying?"
"Maggie, we have a co-op in Central Park West. Thomas will ride in a taxi with me home soon. We are going downstairs and get some hot chocolate. Care to join us?"
"No, thanks. I am tired. Richard and I will cuddle up and watch TV for a while. How about let's all have breakfast before we leave for home in the morning?"
"Great idea. Here or in the park. What time does Tavern on the Green open?" "Do you know?" "Never mind. I will call in the morning. Perhaps we can meet there. See you, bye."
"Come, my husband. We are finally alone," as she pulled my hand to our bedroom. I was in bed before Maggie. I pulled the comforter for her to get under with me. We lay there for hours. It seemed just looking in each other's eyes, loving the other with our gaze. Finally, Maggie pulled close, and we embraced, locking our bodies together in a dance of love.
I lay half asleep thinking, what makes a marriage work? People join their lives and become one. Why do so many families fall apart? How can love turn into hate? It does not seem possible you can genuinely love someone one day, hate them the next, yet this happens often. Why? Perhaps there never was love, just emotion or convenience. What are the qualities that make for a good union? These thoughts might seem strange. I am lying here with the one I love incredibly happy. Maybe these thoughts are triggered by my concern for Thomas. He has never had a girlfriend. He is so vulnerable, it would be so easy for him to become entwined with the wrong person. I saw the way he looked at Liz. He knew nothing of her or her family. I recall the words of Scripture in Ephesians. I think it is said, "Husbands, love your wives, as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." There is no command for wives to love their husbands, only to submit themselves. Trying to remember my Greek from a course I took at Duke, submit comes from the Greek word hupo, meaning under. That makes sense. Man must love, honor, cherish his wife as Christ loves his family. Women must respect their husbands and willingly be under him. I like everything simple. I say it this way. Man needs to give love and woman needs to get love. If this exists within a family, the family is forever, because the fruit of that union will follow as the apple tree gives apples. There. I found the key to happiness. When men and women select their mate, they only need to look at the tree to see the future. If a man loves his mother, only then can he truly love a woman and give her the love she needs. If a woman truly loves and respects her father, only then can she respect and be under a man. Without these simple truths, you have chaos. Life is simple if we follow the rules. I recall the first time I spoke with Michael. He explained his family's passion for racehorses and how they took such care in the breeding, searching for the best trees of the male and female.
Richard, wake up. Someone is at the door. I shook my head, trying to open my eyes. Maggie is shaking me. Answer the door. I pulled on my robe and opened the door to find Thomas standing there, smiling at me.
It is morning. Look outside on a beautiful day.
Thomas, I know it is morning, but it is early. Why are you so full of energy?
Maggie appeared still half asleep. Hi, Thomas. Did you take Liz home?
Yes, around 2 a.m. we sat and talked for hours. We had lots of fun.
Fun? What kind of fun are we talking about here?
We just laughed a lot. She said, I am the first person she met who is not consumed with making money or starting a revolution. She said it is fun to be normal, not so darn serious. She asked about my home, my family, and whether they love each other. Her mother and father live in separate worlds. Her father is a retailer with stores all over, and her mother is involved in politics, very socialistic. She said they never see each other. That is why she was at the party. Her mother is a big supporter of some group, Students for a Democratic Society, who asked her to attend. Her mother could not attend, so she sent Liz.
Do you like her?
Sure, I like her. Not like you think, but as a friend. Her father would never allow her to be with a goyim like me.
Oh, I forgot Liz is Jewish.
Yes, a very nice person. She said I am the whitest thinking and looking person she ever met.
Did you guys make out?
Maggie, you are not supposed to ask such personal questions.
Why not? All the girls at school will be asking me. We always tell everything. Girls have no secrets, Thomas. Remember that. We love the details of an affair. Let's get dressed, Richard. Is Liz coming to breakfast with us?
No. Her mother is in town and wants her to go someplace with her. She said she would talk to you soon.
Maggie, let's eat here. The view is great. It is comfortable.
Sure. Order me some poached eggs, toast, orange juice, and coffee. I am going to take a bath.
Thomas, what do you want for breakfast?
Whatever you order, get for me.
Come on, man. You are acting very strange. Did you guys make out or not?
Kind of.
Kind of? What kind of answer is that? Come clean. It is me, Richard. I won't tell.
We put on the robes, the soft ones in the bathroom, then sat on the sofa and kissed a little. Liz put her hands in my lap and felt around. I guess I got excited. It got hard, and she played with it. She smiled at me, then rubbed her hands down my legs. When she touched my braces, Liz sat up, then asked about the braces. I told her the story. She cried, saying how sorry she was for my pain, while she was rubbing it. All of a sudden, she is kissing it. I experienced nothing like that. When she finished, she kissed me, saying, "That will make your legs better." Richard, you know what? It did. I forgot I was wearing braces. All I could think of was how relaxed I am. That is when she asked me to take her home.
Knocking on the door made us jump. We are both so engrossed in our thoughts, but the coffee is needed.
What are you boys up to? Maggie asked as she walked into the room, dressed and looking lovely.
Nothing. Waiting for you, my dear.
Sure. Why do you both have red faces? Don't keep secrets.
Honey, Gregory will take us to the airport this morning. Did you fly or take the train?
The train, of course. He can drop me at Grand Central. So what do you have planned for us this summer?
I thought we might go to the moon.
You go to the moon. I want something closer to home with shopping.
Just kidding, honey. My friend from MIT, William Lenoir, is in the space program. He asked if we would like to come to Florida and see the spaceship that is going to the moon. They recently opened the Launch Operations Center on Merritt Island, Florida. We can go to Florida, see the Space Center, and go to Palm Beach. How's that sound?
Now you're talking my language, lover. You make the arrangements and pick me up. I love you madly.
I called Gregory to pick us up at 11:45 a.m. We had over an hour to kill before our flight to Raleigh. I want to phone the colonel. There is something about Max Stevens that does not fit. Why is he so interested in me? Colonel Richard, I am in the city. You asked me to tell you if someone new wanted to be friends. We asked to spend the 4th with Michael Whitney Strait at Kennedy's apartment at the Carlisle. Michael introduced me to Max Stevens. He is involved with some anti-war groups, Students for a Democratic Society. He was kind of intense and asked me to lunch to talk more. He said he works with Alan Haber and Tom Hayden, neither of whom are familiar. Appreciate it if you check them out for me.
Richard, now you are thinking smart. Find out before something happens. When will you be back in North Carolina?
In a few hours, Colonel, Thomas Nelson is with me. We are at the airport now waiting for a flight home.
Richard, I will get a hold of Matt later. He will let you know. Have a good trip.
Richard, thank you for taking me to New York. It was the best experience of my life. I never imagined how some people live. It seems like there are two or three Americas, one for the poor, another for people like us, then a completely different one for those that thrive off of the labor of those beneath them. In nature, water does not flow uphill, but here you can see money, sure does. We don't see the difference at home, there it's all the same, but in New York, you see it in every face. I suppose it is like that in every great city, but this is the first one I have seen.
Yea, Thomas, your observation is correct. I am reminded of Hemingway's line, "The only difference between the rich and other people is that the rich have more money." I do not entirely agree with this line. I like your observation better. When you said there are three different Americas, I will add worlds. What I see is people like us, those in the middle, have concern for the plight of the poor. Those at the top have no regard for those they think beneath them. They see those as mere numbers. That is why it is so easy for them to start wars. They make huge profits and never feel death's pain. Their sons do not fight in these wars. They most certainly do not. Underlings take care of that. The only weapon they brandish is their martini glass while sitting in their clubs talking brave.
Richard, don't you aspire to be one of them? I mean, rich and all?
Thomas, we will make money, but we will not be one of them. I intend to be like Hemingway says, the same with just a little more money. Remember, in 1 Timothy, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." Love, not the need for money, creates evil. We need money to fight those who love money as their God. It was also said, "It takes fire to fight a fire." Thomas, you know what God meant when he commanded Adam and Eve, saying, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die." The tree is not a fruit tree as commonly believed. It is the tree, the roots, the fruit, so to speak, of those who desire to control the world with money as their power source. Remember, in the scriptures, the fruit is a metaphor for man. For example, when it is said in Matthew 7, "A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit." It all ties to man's character, he. Who has a love of money as his center brings forth evil? You will not see wars started by the poor. They have nothing to gain. War is for gain. Thomas, we will be firemen, using money to fight money. How's that sound, Captain?
I am ready to fight with you, Richard. Point the way.
Thomas, wake up. We are at home. You dozed off, must have been dreaming about last night.
Hey, man, don't talk like that. Dad is very perceptive.
Matt was sitting on the front porch as we drove up. Hey, big shots, how was the trip, son?
Oh, great. I can't wait to tell you and Mom.
Richard, the colonel called. He wants to speak to you ASAP. Let's drive to the store. Thomas, get your stuff. Mother has dinner ready. I will be right back. The phone rang in the booth almost as we drove up. Richard, your instincts are right about this guy, Stevens. He is a CIA asset. They are concerned about any group that opposes their plans. The war is on their front burner now. Max Stevens is put inside to report on people who oppose the war.
Colonel, is he an agent?
No, he is an asset. They have over 25,000 paid assets worldwide. Why do you think they need the drug trade to pay all of this? None of this is in the U.S. budget. It is all off the books. They require millions upon millions of dollars in cash every month to maintain their network of assets. These paid assets work in every defense contractor, every central church, the universities, all embassies, and newspapers of the world. The pigs need greasing, and the drug trade pays for it all. Richard, you cannot imagine the vast network and the cost of it. Hell, the FBI has over 4,000 assets in the States. The roots grow everywhere. Be careful. You can use this guy. Feed him misinformation, which he will forward. Give him the 180 degrees. If you are going south, tell him north. You will learn the value. Use their methods against them. Keep in touch.